Hi, guys. All right. If you guys do me a favor, we can turn to John chapter 15. And this one, this is a, this is commonly part of the, it's called the Upper Room Discourse or the Farewell Discourse. That usually goes between chapters 13 and 16 in John. This one, though, we're going to start in chapter 15, verse 1. It's about abiding. And we're going to pick up as Jesus is leaving. I don't think this chapter 15 was spoken to the disciples in the upper room. I believe they were walking from the upper room to the Mount of Olives. And the reason I believe that is the last chapter, or the last verse in chapter 14, it says, "Arise, let us go hence." So let's get up and walk and go. And so if he was going from the upper room through Jerusalem to the Mount of Olives, he probably would have passed by the temple. And this time of year is Passover when this was being written. And he was speaking these words. And so the temple is just a buzz, 24 hours a day, sacrifices going on and on. And one of the great visions of the temple was the doors. The doors were made of brass, and they were actually forged in Greece. And according to Josephus, they forged these out of the best brass they could possibly find in Greece, and they floated them back from Greece to Jerusalem and hung them on the temple. And one of the great symbols on these doors was the national spiritual symbol of Israel, which happened to be the vine. And these vines were embossed in the door. They were just absolutely beautiful. They overlaid in gold, so you just couldn't miss them. And I think as they were walking along, maybe somebody said something about, "Hey, look at these wonderful doors. Aren't they something?" Or Jesus made something. And he probably picked up on that. And from that point on, he started teaching about the vine and how things, you know, "I am the branch, I am the vine, you are the branch." So using that visual metaphor, I think he probably stepped off into a little study. Now, as we go through these 17 chapters, these 17 verses, there's a couple words we're going to look at. Abide is used 12 times, love is used 10 times, and fruit is used 8 times. And it's always a good idea if you can use the Bible to help translate the Bible. And we have a perfect example and a perfect opportunity to do that here. The word abide has been translated by two different words in this discourse. One in verse 9, and that is the word continue, and one in verse 16, and that's the word remain. So continue kind of brings with it the idea of moving forward. You continue in your growth and development, you move forward, and you hold together the things that you have learned, the good things from the past. You let the bad things go. Don't worry about that stuff. You hang on to the good things from the past. So you're moving forward, you're continuing forward, and you're hanging on to the good things of the past. And remain means to continue without change in your condition or the quality of your place. So that's why it's when he says abide in the vine. So you're staying in a one good place, you're continuing to move forward in that good place, and you're leaving the bad stuff behind you. So the word abide in this 17 verses has nothing to do about standing still. It's all about growth. And that's, I think, part of the reason why he uses the metaphor for I am the vine, you are the branches. He purges you, he waters you, he does this, he does that to help you grow. So it's all about moving forward, growing, producing fruit, yielding fruit, glorifying the Father. So as we start, and we'll start in verse 1, and there's kind of a principle. I don't know if I definitely didn't come up with it, but I think I heard it from Pastor Chuck. Jesus has this tendency to teach in this manner. He will set forth a principle. He'll give you an illustration, and then he'll use an application. And in the first three verses here, and they break out pretty nicely, one, two, three, then four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. There's that pattern kind of lends itself to this study. So I'll show you what I mean with chapter 15, verse 1, 2, and 3. So verse 1, I am the vine and my Father is the husbandman. Verse 2, every branch that in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Verse 3, now you are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. So here's the pattern. Verse 1, that's the principle. I am the vine, my Father is the husbandman. In verse 2, you notice that he makes reference to what a gardener, a tiller, somebody that's taking care of a vineyard would do. He says, every branch in me that bears not fruit, he takes away, and every branch that bears fruit, he purges it or prunes it or cleanses it, and that it may bring forth more fruit. Now, the application, verse 3. Now, you are clean. See, you are cleaned through the purging process, and you are clean through the word which I have spoken to you. So the word is the cleansing vehicle, and that is what cleanses us, purges us, gets rid of the bad stuff, gets us to the situation where, point where we can produce fruit. So you see that pattern, and it's going to kind of play itself out in the rest of the study also. So let's go back. In verse 1, it says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. You know, John associates again the word truth with Jesus. That word in his gospel alone is used 48 times. The word truth or true is used 48 times in the gospel, and I think it's really an underlying theme of the gospel and of Christ's ministry. He is, as some of these scriptures will show, says he is the word made flesh, full of grace and truth. That's verse 114, chapter 1, verse 14. The one we all know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The Spirit of truth will guide you to all truth. Thy word is truth. And the one I kind of like a lot is it's John 18:38, and it says, everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. So if you hear the voice of the Lord, if you hear the Holy Spirit speaking to you, then you are of the truth. You're sitting in a good spot. And as we move through this, you're going to see that that voice is very, very important, because it's his word that is going to make us serviceable. It helps with the sanctification. It's a sanctification process. It's going to set us apart to make us so we can bear fruit. And this is a very important thing. So if you're wondering, am I like a fruit bearer? Am I where I'm supposed to be? Well, ask yourself the question, do I hear the Lord? When I read the word, do I hear him speak to me? It's a very good question to ask yourself. The true vine, Jesus is the legitimate vine. He is not some imitation. He is the true vine that God planted on the earth for us. As a matter of fact, in the Old Testament, it's prophesied that Jesus would grow up before him as a tender plant, as a root out of dry ground. So he is the true vine. The vine is our vital connection. If you look at a vine, and for the first time in my life, I've grown something. I mean, I grow a tomato plant. So I'm out tending this little tomato plant, and we got a ton of tomatoes. They're green, but they're tomatoes. And I was telling Debbie, and said, you know, I'd be glad with one tomato. Just give me one. But now it's starting to give a little more. But you watch the tomato plant. These little branches are connected to that main vine, and they grow off, and the little blossoms pop out, and the tomatoes pop out. They don't have to do nothing. It just happens. I water it, and then it grows. So it's a process that really doesn't take much effort on our part. It's a spiritually natural result of the right actions that we take. If we are diligent in our study and our prayer, we will bear fruit. So he calls the Father, God, the husbandman. And if we turn with me to Isaiah chapter 5, in my notes, I have my page numbers in my notes, so I know right where I'm going, because I get scared and confused. In my book, it's 974. I don't know where it is in yours. Okay, Isaiah chapter 5. Okay, we'll read just a couple verses, 1 and 2. It says, Isaiah's prophesying, says, "Now I will sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching this vineyard. My well-beloved hath a vineyard and a very fruitful hill." Israel was his vineyard and a very fruitful hill. Jesus is the vine and a very fruitful hill. "And he fenced it in." Now this is the job of the husbandman. This is the job of the gardener. This is what God does with us. Put this on yourself. Think about what he's saying here. He's going to do for us. We are the vine. He is the vine. Jesus is the vine. God is the husbandman. He is protecting the vine, okay? "He has fenced it in. He has gathered out the stones therefrom." He cleared the stones out. He planted it with the choicest vine. "He built a tower in the midst of it. He also made a wine press therein, and he looked that it should bring forth grapes." And as Israel went at the last part of this, and it brought forth wild grapes. So that's another story for another time. But you see the job that the husband has. He's the one that clears the ground. He's the one that builds the fence around it. He protects you. He puts a tower in there so he can watch over you. That's what he does for us. That's what Jesus will do for us too. So back to John 15, chapter 2. Verse 2, I'm sorry. So verse 2, it says, "Every branch in me that bears not fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he purges it, that it may bring forth more fruit." So it's bear or not. There's no middle ground. You're either bearing fruit or you're not. And this is consistent with Jesus' teaching. He says, "I would rather you be hot or cold. If you're lukewarm, I'm going to spew you out of my mouth." So it's better to be, I've always thought, if you're going to flake out, go hog wild and flake out. Don't be somebody that's coming to church and, you know, trying to live a half-baked life with Jesus. Either go for it all the way, full throttle, or back off and go do your thing. You know, God will get a hold of you in both those situations. Lukewarm, he can't really talk to you that well. He'll spit out of his mouth. So you're either bearing fruit or you're not bearing fruit. Branches only function, we're the branch. Branch only function is to bear fruit. We're only to bear fruit. If it doesn't bear fruit, Jesus will take measures to make it bear fruit. These measures sometimes won't be very pleasant, but he'll do it. And in the verse here it says, he takes away the branch. Some commentators and some people feel that means that they physically take him away, physical death. You're eliminated from the earth, you're sent to heaven, you're done. I don't see it like that. It can be read and it can be understood as he takes the vine and he'll pick it up. In Israel, the vines sometimes grow on the ground. And they'll come along and pick the vines up and the grapes up, and they'll harness them up on the vine or a support. They'll make the angle into the vine a little more direct so the sap or the fluid will run to it. The vine gets up in the light so the light can get a hold of it and it can start producing fruit. So I think that's what this means. I think a good husbandman is not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think he's going to take you. He's going to put you in a position where you can get water, light, and nourishment, and you're going to start bearing fruit. So that's what I think that means. He purges or prunes a fruit branch. Now this is if we are bearing fruit, he will come along and he'll purge it, he'll prune it. He'll cut it at strategic places, right where the little nodes are. He'll cut it to make two or three more grow off. In our case, that pruning and cleansing process is done through the word. This is verse 3. "Now you're clean through the word which I have spoken unto you." So the word has this amazing cleansing power. The Bible speaks of it in a couple places. "The word is like a refiner's fire and like a fuller soap. It is sharper than any two-edged sword." So there you have the idea that the fire of affliction. David said, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray." So in the fire of affliction, you're going to get the stuff that you want, that you don't want in your life, that's causing you this pain and struggle in your spiritual life, burned away. And then that word is going to come in like a two-edged sword, like a surgical scalpel, and it's going to cut between soul and spirit and flesh and soul, and it's going to cut that stuff away and debride the infected tissue away and throw it away and wrap it up and build you up. It's really going to, and sometimes that's not a real pleasant process. And one of the songs they sung tonight, it said, "Your fire, I'd rather be here in your fire than not." So I'd rather be in a place where the Lord is working on me than not. I think that was the words. It was kind of neat. So it's our responsibility, really, to put ourselves in that position. You know, if you're going to go to a doctor or a surgeon, you're going to have to get on the bed yourself. And they're going to help you transfer onto the surgical table. They're going to work with you. So you have to put yourself in the position to be helped by the physician. We have to put ourselves in a position to be helped by Jesus. How do you do that? Well, it takes contact with the Word. Would you go up to a bar of soap in the faucet and just look at it? Work, clean my hands, come on, let's go. No, you grab the soap, you turn the water on, you do your thing, you rinse your hands, you dry them off, you get in contact with it. You got to get in contact with it, okay? So contact equals pruning. Pruning equals cleaning, and cleaning and pruning equals growth. Let's move on. So verse 4, like we said before, we're going to watch that little pattern again, principle, illustration, application. So verse 4, "Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me." Verse 5. "I am the vine." So there's the illustration. The principle is that you abide in the vine. Okay, I'll abide in the vine. Where's the vine? What's the vine? Illustration. "I am the vine, you are the branches. He that abides in me, and I in him, the same bring forth much fruit, for without me you can do nothing." Application. If a man abides not in me, so here's somebody that's not abiding. "He is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them up and cast them into the fire, and they are burned." So what you're seeing here is in verse 5 is a branch connected to the vine, the abiding branch. It's producing fruit. I find it interesting that we can be a branch connected to the vine and we cannot produce fruit. So we have some choice and some action in that. And if we're not right with the Lord and we're not in the position to bear fruit, we won't bear fruit. And what he's talking about here, again, is not elimination, death or off into the deep abyss you go, whatever it may be. When he says, if a man abide not in me, in verse 6, he says, if a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them up and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. This is a result of a fruitless walk. This is something we don't want to be involved in, a fruitless walk. So what happens is you live your life as a fruitless Christian, or your fruit is not, it's rotten. It's rotten fruit, whatever. So what happens at the end is that your works, so your fruit, your works are judged. And if they're wood, hay, and stubble, up they go. You get no reward. If they're gold, silver, or precious stones, they remain, and you get a reward. So you get a heavenly reward. That's what he's talking about. So the fruitless walk, no reward. Fruitful walk, reward, eternal rewards in heaven. We can stunt our growth. We cannot do what we're supposed to do. We cannot study, we cannot pray, we can just go about our day, we can start our growth. So back into verse 4. So abide in me and I in you, as a branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in a vine, no more can you except you abide in me. See, a branch separated from the vine cannot produce fruit. And one of the great things about being a branch is you're connected to the vine and you are a partaker of that vine's nature. Think about this. This is a mystery. This is a wonderful truth that we are connected to Jesus. And through that connection, we have his nature. We are holy. We have the same nature, the same. We're not God by any stretch of the imagination, but we have his nature within us. That's a great and powerful truth, and we should ask him to manifest that truth to us on a daily basis. How to use that strength and that power. We should do that every day. We can do nothing apart from him. And what he's talking about here, we can do nothing about fruit bearing. We cannot produce fruit on ourselves for ourselves. I watch that tomato plant. Those little branches aren't going, I know I can do it. I know I can produce fruit. No, they just do it. It's all part of the natural process. They just do it. Naturally connected to the vine, praying and studying the word, you will produce fruit. You know, our works reflect our heart. If our heart is selfish, it's going to be wood. It's going to be hay. It's going to be stubble. If we have others in our motives, not ourselves, and then it's going to be that gold, silver, and precious stones, because we're not focusing on ourselves. We're focusing on other people. Verse 7. And again, we go through that principle illustration of, and what did I say that was? Application, thank you. All right. If you abide in me, verse 7, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will and it shall be done unto you. Verse 8, here is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, so shall you be my disciples. Verse 9, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Continue in my love. So back to verse 7. Abiding always will cause prayer. If we're abiding and his words abide in me, you're going to ask what you want and you'll get it. Now, if you ask yourself, am I abiding? Am I an abiding Christian? Ask yourself another question. Are you praying? If you're not praying, you're not abiding. We got to be smart in prayer, though. You know, James says you have not because you ask not because you want to consume it on yourself. So let's go to 1 Kings chapter 3. And this is a story about Solomon when the Lord asked Solomon, you'll see in verse 3, he asked Solomon, what in a dream, what do you want me to give you? Okay. First Kings 3 and verse 5. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared unto Solomon in a dream by night and asked, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. So God just flat out asked him, what do you want? You know, that's a loaded question for some of us. Well, look at Solomon's response. Go down to verse 9. He says this, I'm going to read through 15. It says, give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy great people? And the speech pleased the Lord, and Solomon asked this thing. And God said unto him, Thou hast asked this thing and hast not asked thyself long life. Most of us would probably say, give me a couple extra years. Long life, neither have you asked for riches. Hello, that would have been my prayer. Nor had asked for life of thine enemies, but has asked for thyself understanding to discern judgments. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart. And we know later that Solomon was the wisest man ever to live, ever to have lived. So that there was none like thee before, neither anything after thee shall arise like unto thee. And I have given also to thee that which thou hast not asked. So the things he left out of the prayer, the selfish things he left out, God gave him. Look, he gave him riches, he gave him honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee in thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways and keep my statutes and my commandments, as the father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem, and he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and offered up burnt offerings, and offered peace offerings, and made a feast to all his servants. So let's be smart in prayer. God is not a genie in a bottle. You know, get my three wishes from God. No, God is, what God wants from us is, and in this verse, he says, ask what you want, and it shall be given unto thee. Now, in verse 9, it says that as the Father had loved me, so I have loved you. Continue in my love. So he's asking that we should be praying for love, and we should be praying also to bear fruit. So in verse 8, it says, herein is the Father glorified. So we should pray for what will glorify the Father. Here is what the Father glorified, that you bear much fruit and you shall be my disciples. The disciples, as a disciple, our responsibility is to bear fruit. Now, if you look at this, there's a progression here in fruit bearing. Let's go back to verse 2. Verse 2, verse 2 says, every branch in me that bears not fruit, he takes away, and every branch in me that bears fruit. So there's the start. We start bearing fruit. That's a start. But then he prunes us. He purges us, and that we can bring forth more fruit. So we get fruit, we get purged, now we get more fruit. Now, go to verse 5. I am the vine, you are the branches. He that abide in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. So that's a progression. And that's what he's talking about, abiding. And like I said earlier, growth. You start off bearing some fruit, you bear more fruit, and you bear much fruit. And the essence of this fruit is always love. It's always selfless love. If you can put others before yourself, you're going to bear fruit. Fruit's sort of an ambiguous term. You know, I can't tell you that it's a grape, it's an apple, it's a pear, it's a banana. You know, I don't know. It's something that is kind of a personal thing. You know when you're bearing fruit. You know when you're doing good. You know when you're being used of the Lord. When you're being used of the Lord, you're bearing fruit. So we get, in this exchange, we get blessed in two ways. We get rewards, you know, gold, silver, precious stones. And we also get to glorify the Father. So we get an eternal reward, and we can be a glory to the Father. What a wonderful thing for a mere human to be able to do, to say that I'm going to be blessed eternally. But, and also, I can glorify my Father, which is in heaven, by what I do here on earth to represent him. What a glorious thing and a big responsibility, huh? So, verse 10. If you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. So again, we have that if statement. That's free will, volition. We have free will. We can decide not to abide or to abide. And it says, keep, if you keep my commandments. It keeps interesting. It sort of talks about kind of guard against an assault. So if he is giving you commandments through his word, then there's going to be an assault. There will be an attack from the enemy. So you have to guard your heart against that kind of stuff and be very diligent in your study and prayer so that when that stuff comes along, it's not going to surprise you. Now, you don't want to, when I was in the military, one of the worst things you could ever do was fall asleep on guard duty. And when I made it up high enough that I was, they call them commander of the relief, I'd go around and watch, check on the guards. And in Germany, where I was, in the wintertime, believe me, it got cold. It would just freeze you right in half. And I walked out and I would bring coffee and chicken soup with me because I knew these guys were out because I'd been in, they got freezing their tuchuses off. And so I walked up on this one guy and he was standing on the windward side of the tree, okay? Frozen, absolutely frozen. Port arms, and I thought he was dead. So I woke him up, give him some coffee, thawed him out, put him on the lee side of the tree, you know, crouch down, just wait, you'll be okay. Your shift's over in a couple minutes, whatever. Then I walked to the other guy, and this guy was on the backside looking around the tree. He was doing his job. So he was keeping guard. The other guy was like out of it completely. And we don't want to be that guy. We don't want to be frozen to the tree. We want to be ready, you know, because here comes the enemy. We don't want to be stuck there and not have our weapon loaded, not ready to do our job. We have to be ready to fight off that attack of the enemy. So that's the keep thing. Always keep your eye. My grandfather, great guy, Neil, keep your eye on a donut, not in a hole. You know, let's watch the things that we're supposed to be watching. You know, let's not give play to the stuff that we ain't supposed to be watching. So it says, these, verse 11, these things have I spoken to you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. There's a couple things here, and I probably don't have to explain this, but I will. There's joy, and there's happiness. Two completely different things. Absolutely two completely different things. Joy is eternal and a result of obedience to God. Happiness is temporal, temporary, earthly, and has nothing to do with obedience at all. It has all to do about self. Things make me happy. What am I going to get? I got a new watch, I'm happy. I got a new car, I'm happy. I got a new suit, I'm happy. No. Joy is eternal, and the object of our joy should be submission to Christ. If we submit ourselves to Christ, the Bible sets that joy in our heart. It'll fill us with a godly confidence. Joy gives us confidence because joy is always there. Joy will never leave you. It's eternal. That's why you can be, that's what confuses people so much. You know, my house burned down. I got in a car, whatever. And you're just a happy guy. You know, praise the Lord. Thank God he's going to give me a new and bigger house. This one burned down, but I got a newer, bigger one coming around the pike. You know, whatever it may be, the joy of the Lord in you is, I think, a beacon to people that really is something that is more powerful than any witness that we can do. If we're happy and joyful and we're relaxed and we're confident in our trials and tribulations, believe me, people see that. They understand that. That's something that we should all strive for. You know, if we're going to have a meltdown, we need to melt down with our mate in prayer. You know, we don't need to melt down in front of our unsaved friends. You know, especially if that meltdown means go out and pull back a few Budweisers at a local bar with them to blow off some steam. That ain't working for you. That ain't going to be the right thing to do. So, that's why Paul says, I can either be base or abounding. I will be a content. Godliness with great contentment, godliness with contentment, he says, is great gain. Our gain in this situation and in that formula is always joy. So this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. There you go. What do you think God wants you to do? Tell me what to do, Lord. This, okay. This is my commandment. Love them, her, him, as I loved you. Simple, simple statement. Very, very difficult to live out. Why? Because God's prescription for this joy, he just remember this illustration application thing, God's prescription for joy is love. What kind of love is he talking about here? He's talking about agape love. That love is the love that he showed. And we'll see that coming up in the next couple of verses. That love is selfless, selfless, absolutely looking to the other person's love. So verse 13. Here he goes. It says, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Verse 14, you are my friends if you do whatever, so whatsoever I command you. Verse 15, henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known unto you. So greater love has no man than this, than a man that lay down his life for friends. You know, I had my grandfather was in the military for 35 years. He started off in World War I. He went to World War II. He went to Korea, and he was in even during Vietnam. My dad was in the Air Force for 20 years. I was in the Army for 7. But one of the things I like to do sometimes is I like to read about Medal of Honor. The guys that have gotten the Medal of Honor. And I can't tell you how many, do it sometime, it's interesting. I can't tell you how many of these young fellas, they were 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, would be in a combat situation and a grenade would be, incoming grenade. This kid would dive on this grenade. I read it, I've read it 25, 30 times. He would dive on the grenade, give his life for his friends. And he's got, and I've seen some interviews with guys that are living today, 40 years later, that are still blown away by that sacrifice, that they can stand in the presence of their wife, their kids, their grandkids, because this 18-year-old kid that really didn't know from nothing, just out of basic training, he knew how to clean and fire his weapon and take an order, dived on a grenade. So that's self-sacrificing love, but that's nothing compared to what Christ has done for us. See, self-sacrificial love is that perfect example of agape love. That is godly love in its core. That is absolute godly love. It's unattainable. It's an unattainable, it's our unattainable sacrifice. We cannot get there. We cannot give ourselves away enough to be at the level that he was at. And that's good. You know why? Because you never can get there. What's abiding all about? It's about growth. You always have another level to attain. You always have somewhere to go. You're never going to be completed until you fall over, they throw you in the box, and you go to heaven. You cannot, there's always room for growth. Always room for growth. And that's exemplified, of course, by John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. That's whoever loves him, you know, shall have everlasting life. That is John 3:16, that's exemplified. You know, how do you know true love, really? If you want to, we can turn real quickly to 1 John 3:16, not John 3:16, but 1 John 3:16, that's towards the back of the Bible. Like I said, in my Bible, it's page 1774, so. Okay, we're going to read 16 through 18. And this is John, again, speaking about this self-sacrificial love. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down ourselves for the brethren. But whosoever hath this world's good, and see his brother have a need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, How dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed. I find it very interesting that he brings it down to a monetary situation. That's where most of us have the hardest part. I'm not going to give up that buck. I worked hard for that sucker. That's mine. But if you see somebody that has a need and you're able to take care of that need and you don't do it, shame on you. That's faith without works. That's dead, sterile faith. And that's, we should love in, not in tongue, but in deed. Let your talk match your walk. Walk the talk, talk the walk, however you want to tell, however you want to put it. Put shoe leather on your faith. Do these things that he's called you to do. And when you get that in your mind, you can kind of see things around you that, you know, that you don't know. That somebody, you know, you might say, well, I'm going to give you something. Well, I don't want that. Well, you're going to get it because God told me to give it to you, and I'm not going to not give it to you because I'm going to get in trouble if I don't. Now, you can do what you want with it once you get it, but once it leaves my hands, I'm free. I'm good. I'm doing what I'm commanded to do. Verse 15. It says, henceforth I call you servants, for the servant knoweth not. Henceforth I call you not servants, I'm sorry. For the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all the things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known to you. You see, servants many times serve without explanation. They don't know diddly about the bigger plan. You know, they might have one task, one little cog in a big wheel, but they don't know what's going on. You know, friends are not held to such a level. We tell our friends what our plans are. We invite them to be part of our plans to help us through these things that we want to do. So what Jesus did was he opened up the Father's plan of salvation to these guys. They had no idea. It was a mystery. The Bible called it a mystery. As a matter of fact, Paul says this. He says, and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the Gentiles, believed unto in the world, and received up to glory. That, my friends, is a mystery. That we know it's true, but we don't know how it happened. We don't know the ins and outs of it. I don't think we'll really know, even when we get to heaven, I don't think we'll know. I think that's that old top secret thing, you have a need to know, you know, and I don't think we need to know. So he's made us, he's not calling us servants or slaves any longer. So we're privy to the plan, and we're not slaves or servants to sin. He's lifted that slave bondage off our back. We aren't slaves to that sin anymore. We can give that sin up. We can turn it over to him. We can turn our back on it. He can carry it. Deny yourself. Pick up your cross. Follow me daily. You know, my yoke is easy. My burden is light. It's interesting that yokes, when they make these yokes for oxen, they make dual yoke, and they'll put a young oxen with an old oxen, but they're comfortable. They're not chafing and things like this, and that's what Jesus said. His yoke is easy. If you yoke up with Jesus, that yoke fits perfectly on you. It's perfect. You're in perfect sync with the master. You're the young dumb ox, and he's the old smart ox. And he's going to teach you. And that thing fits wonderfully. You don't have to worry about it chafing. Now, if you start going off in another direction, you know, he's going to jerk you back, you know, crank that leash on that dog and bring you back. So you know, and I'm sure, you know, the yoke is not got much wiggle room. So if you start going off a little bit wrong, you're not feeling right. So you got to come back. So we're not slaves of sin, and we are privy to the whole secret. We know the whole deal. So in all this, Jesus has kind of brought us back to the beginning. verse 1, it talks about he is the true vine. So he brings us back to where we started, at the truth. You know, he gives us the truth about the salvation for humanity. Then in verse 16, he reminds us exactly where all the praise and all the honor should go. And he tells us this. He says, you have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you. Better word is really appointed. I appointed you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that so whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. So really, this is clarification of our placement in the vine. We didn't get a running start on the other side of the vineyard and go charging at this vine and dive into it and be yoked into that vine. No, he took us. He put us into him. He's the vine. We are the branches. You know, we're in the vine so that we can communicate with the Father. And there's a little, you know, not much about formulas, but there's a little formula. If you ask the Father in my name, then he will give it to you. So we're connected to the vine. The vine is connected to the Father. So we ask the Father, and through that vine, that he's the mediator. And that's one of Christ's ministry. He is a mediator between God and man. It says, I am between God and man. I stand between you and the Lord and God the Father. I am, you know, when you stand before the Father, I stand there and you are clean in me. So he's the mediator. And then in verse 17, it says, these things I command you, that you love one another. Very simple. Really, really, he reiterates it again. I'm not really giving you, you know, you got to go out in the parking lot, stand on one leg, put your hand on top of your head, rub your stomach, stick your tongue out, and go around 5 or 6 times. No. You love one another. That's it. Love. What's love? What is agape love? It's self-sacrificial love, as I said before. It's hard. You got to get yourself out of the way. How do you do that? It takes prayer, takes study, takes contact with the Word, takes that two-edged sword. So let's not neglect what he's given us. He's given us all these tools. He's given us the Bible, he's given us prayer, and he's given us a connection to him. So we need to take responsibility for our own actions and go to him. So that's all I've got, and so we're done. And I want to tell you guys, it's been a real pleasure to give you this little Bible study, and have a great week. And may the Lord bless you and keep you, and may his face shine upon you, and God bless you all. Thank you.